This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting today from the Newseum, Washington, D.C.'s newest museum devoted to journalism and the news business. And there's an audience with us here in the night studio. Thanks to you all for coming in. More money, more polls, more attack ads, but absolutely no gifts, not one, not ever. It's the two-week final push to Election Day. It's Wednesday, just in the nick of time for our weekly hit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
My mother was born before women could vote. My daughter got to vote for her mother for president.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR's political editor Ken Rudin joins us at the Newseum to talk about the presidential campaign in particular and politics in general. This week, Barack Obama raises $150 million in 30 days and gets the thumbs up from Republican heavyweight Colin Powell. John McCain embraces Joe the Plumber and distances himself from Bush the president. Joe Biden warns of an international crisis if his guy is elected. Alaska Senator Ted Stevens is on the hot seat over his massage chair, and Acorn cleans house. Later still, Green Party presidential candidate Cynthia McKinney joins us to take your questions. But first, we start with the news of the week. As always, Ken has a trivia question for us. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. First of all, let me say that, you know, we have not been in this studio in over 2 weeks, and I want to thank WOSU in Columbus, Ohio, and WVTF in Roanoke, Virginia, for taking care of us the last 2 weeks.
They've been great hosts.
They've been wonderful. Okay, trivia question. We're going to hear from Cynthia McKinney later. She is the nominee of the Green Party. Who is the first African-American woman to head up a presidential ticket?
A presidential ticket in November, ballot in November. Give us a call. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. If you think you know the name of the first African-American woman to run for president in November,
head
on the
up
ballot.
A ticket.
Head up a ticket.
Right.
And you can also, we'll take questions from the audience here, answers, from the audience here at the Newseum. But, Ken, Obama's, of all the remarkable developments over the past week, $150 million in fundraising in the month of September.
Yeah, it's just breaking all the kind of records, and it's very interesting to hear Republicans talking about Democrats trying to buy the election that used to be the Democratic slogan for the longest time, that Republicans are trying to buy it. Obviously, there is just amazing amount of enthusiasm for Obama. A lot of small donors, like, you know, 4 foot, you know, short people. small donors, but also a lot of people have just emptied out their pocketbooks. It seems like, and they're asking for more as well, which is pretty remarkable. $150 million in September. God knows what they'll have in October. It seems like, you know, every state that can be competed in, Obama is competitive in.
And the Republicans are trying to make hay out of, first, Senator Obama's pledge to accept public financing, which he went back upon, and second, that he's refusing to disclose the names of donors below $200 levels. He's not required to, but the Republicans are doing that, and they're suspecting some skullduggery there.
Well, there is also talking about some foreign contributions to Obama, and they're trying to insinuate that there's something nefarious going on. And actually, we don't know. The Obama people have said that they're doing the best they can, but given the record number of contributors, it's just a hard thing to do, but Republicans are hoping to make hay out of it.
And he's using a big chunk of that money to buy a half hour of airtime on the major networks next Wednesday night after our next show.
Coincidence? I think not.
Uh-huh. About $1 million a pop. The last time a candidate did that was Ross Perot back in 92, and we all know what good that did for him.
Well, except, you know, something, I mean, it just showed that money does matter. Again, the states that Obama is competing in, first of all, we'll talk about this later in the show, but every state that John Kerry won in 2004 seems to be, at least at this point, with 13 days to go, in Obama's corner. The states that nobody knows about, Nevada, New Mexico, Virginia, North Carolina, Ohio, perhaps Florida, perhaps Indiana, those are all states that President Bush won in 2004 and are up for grabs in 2008. And again, that just shows what the hurdles that John McCain has to face.
In fact, we're seeing that McCain is pulling back on ads, not pulling out of the states, but he's pulling back on ads in six states, including Colorado.
Well, Colorado is a big surprise again. It hasn't gone. I believe it went for President Clinton one time, and I think that's the only, it's only gone Democratic twice since Lyndon Johnson in 1964. It's a tough state. We know it's a battleground state. Democrats have won the governorship. They won a Senate race there a couple of years ago, and they expect to win another Senate race this year with Mark Udall. So it's shifting blue, but again, it just shows more problems for the Republicans.
And we have some people ready to guess on the trivia question. Again, if you think you know the name of the first African-American woman to run for president on the ballot in November, give us a call, 800-989-8255.
To lead the ticket.
Or email us, talk@npr.org. But let's start here in the museum.
My name is Alice Norris, and I live in Washington, D.C., a few blocks from here, and my guest would be Shirley Chisholm.
Shirley Chisholm is her guest.
Well, Shirley Chisholm ran for president. She sought the Democratic nomination in 1972, but she did not head the ticket. She was not the nominee of the party. She did run in 72, not the nominee. We need somebody who actually was a nominee of a party.
Let's go to Dean, and Dean's on the line with us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi. Ken, that was a nice trick question. I believe it was Angela Davis with the Communist Party.
Well, actually, Angela Davis was not the nominee of the Communist Party. She did run. I think, believe it or not, she was Gus Hall's running mate
right.
in 1972. But see, she ran for vice president. I don't know why I know this because everybody at NPR originally came from the Communist Party, and I think that's why we did it. But no, so
I
it's
know I did.
Not Angela Davis.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Dean. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Aaron. Aaron's calling us from Oklahoma City, a red state, but I'm not sure he's a communist.
Yeah, unfortunately, a red state. But yeah, the trivia question, was it for all 50 states on the ballot or just the first female African-American candidate?
It was somebody who headed up. I do not know if she was on all 50 states. I suspect she's on a bunch of states. But she did head up a party as a presidential nominee in November.
Was it Shirley Chisholm?
Well, no. Again, we talked about Shirley Chisholm. She ran for the Democratic nomination, but never headed the ticket, never headed the party.
Then, just real curiously, was it Woodhull back in the Equal Rights Party?
She was not African-American. She was a woman.
Okay.
She was the first woman, but she was not African-American.
That's Frederick Douglass endorsed her. She wasn't African-American. Okay.
Thanks for the call, Aaron. All right, bye-bye. Again, if you think you know the answer, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. New polls coming in throughout this past week, Ken, and they appear to show that Senator Obama's lead is widening.
Well, yes. I mean, it's still. I'm not sure if much has changed in the last couple of weeks. It seems to be anywhere between 6 and 10 and 12 points. But again, as we say over and over again, this is not a national election. If you look in these key battleground states, that's where to watch it. And that's what's very interesting. Virginia, which has not gone Democratic since Lyndon Johnson in 1964, that seems to be moving in Obama's direction. If you go to the NPR map, we still have it as a toss-up. But right now, most polls show Obama anywhere between a 2 and a 6-point lead. And that, again, another state that seems to be slipping away from John McCain. It could be trouble for the Republicans.
On Sunday, more trouble for the Republicans. Colin Powell, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, former Secretary of State, came out with his presidential endorsement.
And I come to the conclusion that because of his ability to inspire, because of the inclusive nature of his campaign, because he is reaching out all across America, because of who he is and his rhetorical abilities, and we have to take that into account, as well as his substance. He has both style and substance. He has met the standard of being a successful president, being an exceptional president. I think he is a transformational figure. He is a new generation coming into the world, onto the world stage, onto the American stage. And for that reason, I'll be voting for Senator Barack Obama.
Glowing words for the Democratic nominee from the Republican on NBC's Meet the Press.
But more importantly, prior to those words, you heard him basically talk about his disappointment and his criticism of John McCain and the way the Republican Party has been running the campaign in 2008. Disappointment, he says, that the party's gone too far to the right. He fears what two more conservative Supreme Court justices would be like. Disappointed in John McCain's judgment of picking Sarah Palin. You know, I suspect, I mean, the way I saw it, it was more of an indictment of John McCain and the way the campaign is going now than a full-fledged endorsement of Obama.
And then the next day, Newt Gingrich, in response to that, said, well, that takes away the experience argument in one stroke. And the next day, Joe Biden said that, you know, if Barack Obama is elected president of the United States, he's going to be tested within the first 6 months. And, of course, Senator McCain pounced on that.
Senator Obama guaranteed that if Senator Obama is elected, Senator Biden said, we will have an international crisis to test America's new president.
Well, he got the senator wrong, at least at the beginning of that, but this is a godsend for the Republican Party.
We're talking about all the people who are giving money to the Obama campaign. I'm convinced the Republicans are paying Joe Biden to say what he says, because a lot of times he says things that perhaps Democrats wish he didn't, but he did say that, you know, if he's elected, there will be an international crisis, and of course it gave John McCain the opportunity to say, well, they're going to test somebody who's never been tested. I, John McCain, have been tested.
We have some emailers with some guesses on the trivia question. Tim says it's Monica Moorhead.
I think she was the Workers' World Party candidate in 1984.
When you defected to the Workers' World Party.
That's exactly right. And I increased the intelligence of both parties. There was somebody before her.
Mary Kate says Carol Moseley Braun.
Carol Moseley Braun ran for the Democratic nomination in 2000, but did not get the nomination.
And Adrian from Portland says Lenora Fulani of the Peace and Freedom Party.
Lenora Fulani did run for president, but again, this is before Lenora Fulani. She did head up the party in 1988, but again, this is before 1988.
I see a number of callers, and nobody's got it right. So
okay.
Why don't we...
Well, the answer, as you well know,
of course,
was Charlene Mitchell of the Communist Party in 1968. She was the first African-American woman to head up a party.
And I was wrong. Roger from St. Paul in Minnesota had the correct answer. It was sitting here on my computer. I apologize. Well done, Roger.
I also have another fun fact. Every time the Philadelphia Phillies have won the World Series, a Republican has been elected president.
Ken, it's only happened once.
Yeah, 1980.
All right. Before we go, we just have a minute left in this segment. But Ken, the Ted Stevens trial here in Washington, this could decide whether the Democrats get to that veto-proof majority of 60 in the Senate. The jury is deliberating as we speak.
Well, we're no longer talking about whether the Democrats will pick up seats in the Senate. That's a guarantee. We're no longer talking about whether they'll pick up 4 or 5. Now, if Ted Stevens is found guilty and is now before the jury in Washington of accepting all these gifts and not reporting them, if Alaska goes down, I mean, there's a lot, everything has to go the Democrats' way, but there's a possibility of reaching 60 seats, which of course would give them complete control over judicial nominations, veto-proof majorities, things like that.
And they'll all get a massage chair delivered to them by Brookstone.
Right. Anyway. By the way, it was not a gift.
No, okay. Of course not. We'll talk more with Ken Rudin in a moment and look ahead to the final 2 weeks of the campaign. What do each of the candidates need to do to win? And we're going to turn to you, as always. If you're in a battleground state, how are the campaigns trying to reach you? Tell us what's happening where you live. 800-989-8255 or drop us an email. The address talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. In the night studio inside the museum in Washington, D.C., Ken Rudin is here, NPR's political editor and our political junkie. You can read his political junkie column at npr.org. We're going to spend the rest of this segment looking ahead to the next 13 days of the presidential campaign. What do each of the candidates need to do to win? If you're in Ohio, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Missouri, any of the other swing states that could be key to this election, tell us what you're seeing. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And joining us here in the night studio are Vin Weber, former Republican member of the House of Representatives from Minnesota, now a Republican strategist and lobbyist. Vin, nice to have you back.
Great to be here.
And you often hear Vin together with Anna Greenberg on this segment. She's a Democratic pollster in Washington, but apparently working for a living today. So kind enough to fill those Democratic shoes. Tad Devine, nice enough to join us here in the museum. Welcome.
Good to be with you. I'm glad I'm not working.
Tad was Al Gore's chief political consultant during the 2000 presidential campaign, now president of Devine Mulvey, a communications firm here in Washington. 13 days out. Vin Weber, what does John McCain need to do to win this election?
Well, he's behind. There's no question about that. He needs to do basically what he's doing. In the last debate, the debate probably is about an even split, depending on if you poll on who won. But the good news for McCain is an issue came out of it that he can campaign on all the way to the election, and that's what he's doing. I heard his speech on in New Hampshire this morning on the radio, and that was the tax issue. And everybody associates it with Joe the plumber and all that stuff. But mm-hmm. the issue of are we going to raise taxes for the purpose of redistributing income is an issue that McCain can talk about all the way to the election. My judgment about the McCain campaign is one of the big problems, besides just the strong Democrat headwind that we've faced all year, is that they have not found a consistent theme to stick with and drive home. There is some evidence in the late polling coming out this week, some evidence, don't want to overstate it, some that is having an impact. The battleground survey nationwide now has it a 2-point race. Now, I realize that's quite at variance with the other national polls we've seen today. I'm not saying it's right, but it is current, and it does indicate that the tax message that John McCain is hitting on might be having some impact. If I were McCain, I would just stick with that message. It is a tried and true Republican message, and it's something that has resonance, and we don't have time for another change of message.
Tat Devine, what does Barack Obama need to do to win this election over the next 2 weeks?
I think he has to continue to be the change candidate in what is a change election. I think that's why he won the nomination of our party. I think that's why he's succeeding in this election. He's convincing people that he can deliver change that this country desperately wants. I think he also has to continue to reassure people that he has the capacity to be president. I think that was the great success of the debates for Senator Obama, that people saw a president, someone they could believe in. And finally, I think what he's got to do is to take advantage of the enormous resource advantage he has right now to go into those states, to play in Virginia, North Carolina, all these other states that have been red for so long, and to force Senator McCain to be on the defensive.
Is the socialism thing working, what Vin was talking about?
I don't think it's worked yet. I mean, there were a lot of polls out. I saw a poll that's very respected yesterday, the NBC Wall Street Journal poll, that said that Obama had a 10-point lead. And inside that poll, all of the internals, independents, white women, Catholics, voting groups that have not been good for Democrats in recent elections, moving strongly towards Obama. So I don't think it's worked yet, and I don't know if there is enough time for it to work.
And Vin Weber, briefly, the effect of the Colin Powell endorsement, that's got to make a difference.
I think it does make a difference. Colin Powell is a friend of mine. I'm very disappointed in what he decided to do, but I respect him, and it was very strong. I don't quite understand why NBC decided to give him a 7-minute infomercial. You know, we have several secretaries of state that are for John McCain. I doubt they're going to give Larry Eagleburger 7 minutes on Meet the Press to explain why he's for McCain this weekend. But it was a powerful endorsement. He stated it well, and it was more powerful because he also said that he is a friend and respects John McCain. It almost made his endorsement of Obama more powerful.
Here's an email from Ann in Charlotte, North Carolina. We are seeing every other commercial on TV is a political ad, predominantly Obama, but seeing a McCain ad occasionally. Obama is also doing radio ads. Senator Dole is also playing a lot of TV ads. And Ken Rudin, Senator Dole is in trouble in North Carolina.
She's in trouble, and I've talked to a lot of Republicans who say that she's been almost invisible in the 6 years she's been in the Senate, at least in the last 2 years. And, of course, being on the banking committee didn't help, too. There's a lot of voter anguish over the bailout slash rescue to a $700 billion bill that Congress passed. And I think Dole, like many incumbents, including mostly Republicans, but many incumbents are hurting because of that vote on the bailout.
And let's see if we get a caller on the line. And this is Deborah. Deborah with us from Hickory, North Carolina.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Well, I would have one question that I haven't heard answered from McCain, and that is why he thinks doing the same thing economically in this country, you know, deregulation and so on, is going to work under him when it isn't working now.
Vin Weber?
Well, I don't think he hasn't, first of all, said that he wants to do the same thing for the next 4 years. But I think what he has said is that raising taxes, which is what Senator Obama's alternative to the current policies is the wrong thing to do. And I agree with that. I mean, I understand Bush cut taxes, hence the Obama people say cutting taxes caused the problem. I don't believe that. And I do agree with Senator McCain that the notion of putting a big tax increase on the economy and when the economy is in as much difficulty as it is right now is the wrong kind of change.
All right. Well, I guess we just have to disagree then.
I think so, Deborah.
But politely, because we're on NPR.
There you go. Civilly.
Oh,
civilly.
Thank
right.
you.
Bye-bye. Senator Obama's campaign came quickly back on that point after the last debate. Here's one of their more recent ads.
Senator Obama, I am not President Bush.
True, but you did vote with Bush 90% of the time. Tax breaks for big corporations and the wealthy, but almost nothing for the middle class. Same as Bush. Keep spending $10 billion a month in Iraq while our own economy struggles. Same as Bush. You may not be George Bush, but
I voted with the president over 90% of the time, higher than a lot of my even Republican colleagues.
And here's a McCain ad taking a swipe at the past 8 Bush years and a couple of swipes at Obama, too.
The last 8 years haven't worked very well, have they? I'll make the next 4 better. Your savings, your job, and your financial security are under siege. Washington is making it worse, bankrupting us with their spending. Telling us paying higher taxes is patriotic and saying we need to spread the wealth around? They refuse common sense solutions for energy independence. So every day we send billions to the Middle East. We need a new direction, and I have a plan.
That from the McCain campaign. Let's get a question from here in the audience at the Newseum.
Hi, my name is Liz Nectarline.
Hold on just a second. We'll get your microphone up. Go ahead, please. Oh, it's up. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Liz Nectarline. I'm from Shaker Heights, Ohio. specifically Cuyahoga County.
Go ahead.
And not so much a question, but you had asked us what we thought the respective parties could possibly do. And I think very similar to the year 2000, if the Republican Party does not write off Cuyahoga County and sends in the grassroots workers and does the door-to-door, the phone calling, that they should not be writing off the state of Ohio at this point.
Do you think, Tad Devine, that she's right about that?
I do. I think it's going to be hard fought all the way to the end in the state of Ohio. I think we have advantages this time that we didn't have in 2000 and 2004. In 2000, I know, because I was at the center of this, we had to make a tough choice. Did we want to advertise in the end in Ohio, or should we advertise in Florida? We chose Florida. I think that was the right choice then. But this time, that choice does not have to be made by Barack Obama. He is going to massively advertise, massively organize. And I think while it is going to be hard fought to the end, I think victory is within his grasp, even in Ohio.
Vin Weber, Ohio, absolutely crucial to Senator McCain's chances. Also Virginia, we mentioned that earlier. He is spending a lot of time and effort in the state of Pennsylvania, a blue state, but a state, at least according to the public opinion polls that we see, he's trailing by double digits.
Yeah, I have to presume, and I don't know this, I have to presume they see something in their internal polling that we don't see in the public polls, because otherwise it doesn't make sense from my standpoint to see them putting all the time they are into Pennsylvania. But they are putting time into it. They think that they have a chance to win there. Ohio is certainly critical. We believe McCain clings to a tiny lead in Ohio. Good news, back from our standpoint, back to the last question, at the volunteer level, the Republican Party is doing pretty well. I was on the phone with a bunch of McCain Republican strategists this morning, and the enthusiasm of our volunteers at the grassroots level is very strong. So we're going to be competitive in the grassroots game going forward. But what Tad said about the resource advantage that Senator Obama has is, of course, absolutely true. We cannot be competitive everywhere, but we can be competitive in Ohio.
Ken?
What do you guys make of the stories about the early voting that in some states, like North Carolina especially, but other states as well, that more and more Democrats have come out? Apparently, one-third of all Americans may vote early voting this year.
Do I have to talk about that? It's A, a good sign for the Democrats, B, a sign of the organizational prowess of the Obama campaign. I wish I could spin this, Ken, some other way. but when people are already voting for the opponent, you can't say that's good news.
Because President Bush had won the early voting both in 2000 and
2004. Yes.
I think it's a very good sign for our party. I saw, for example, in North Carolina, over 250,000 people have voted early already, and 60% of them are Democrats. And, you know, if you've got a 20-point advantage in a group that's voted early, could build to a 30-point advantage before Election Day. That's a big deficit for your opponent to overcome. So I think it's going to help us everywhere.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Sarah. Sarah with us from Charlotte in North Carolina.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
I'm actually standing in a voting line at a Midtown Library, an early voting facility, the Plaza Midwood Library here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been here for an hour.
Wow.
I am probably about 10 minutes away from getting in. There were 70 people in front of me when I got here, and there's 70 people behind me.
This is.
And if that doesn't tell you,
that's amazing.
That people are interested in this state. This is a mixed neighborhood. It's about a mile and a half from the banking center, or the second biggest banking center in the country, whatever you want to call Charlotte.
Used to be anyway.
So I'm you know, we're getting killed as waitresses, but it's a magnificent thing to see. It's just unbelievable. I've been trying to vote for 2 days.
Oh, wow.
And I gave up on lines a couple times between shifts. This is my only day off. I've been here for this amount of time, and about 15 minutes from getting in. And it's just so amazing to see this much interest. And I don't want to get partisan or anything like that, but the state matters. And it's just the interest.
Oh, I think her cell phone battery just went out.
Just before she got partisan. She was a nice lady.
She is a nice lady.
I can't believe Vin cut her off like that.
Very long reach over there. Here's an email from Jeff in Hickory, North Carolina. That's in the western part of the state. Here in North Carolina, incidents of support signs, Obama's being stolen. Getting replacements has become difficult, so resilient supporters have taken to homemade signs. Seeing homemade support signs is moving to undecided voters. It shows real support. Of course, one would hate to be cynical, but we've seen a lot of campaigns manufacture homemade-looking signs in the past.
Also, lawn sign vandalism, I'm afraid, is a bipartisan phenomenon in the last few weeks of any campaign.
We're talking about the next 2 weeks, the final 2 weeks of the presidential campaign. Our guests, of course, NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin, Vin Weber, former Republican member of the House of Representatives from the state of Minnesota, now a strategist and lobbyist here in Washington, D.C., Tad Devine, a Democratic strategist who worked for Al Gore in 2000, now president of Devine Mulvey. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And let's get Rick on the line, and Rick's with us from St. Louis in Missouri.
Yes, hi. Thank you for the time. I think that the key to Missouri is Barack Obama possibly spending more time in the outstate region of Missouri. St. Louis and Kansas City normally do go Democratic, but in order to cut to the Republican lead in outstate Missouri, surprised there aren't more resources being spent in the Springfield, the Boot Hill area of Missouri. That would be the key to the election for Barack Obama in Missouri, and it seems like that's what Senator Claire McCaskill did.
Tad Devine, there were two enormous Obama rallies in Missouri last weekend, one in Kansas City, one in St. Louis.
I think the call is right. I think Missouri, I guess they would call it there, as opposed Western to Missouri the and the rest of the state, that it is critical. And I think one of the reasons Obama's ahead in Virginia right now is that he spent a lot of time in what the Republicans call the real Virginia. I happen to live in McLean. I think I live in Virginia, but apparently we don't in Northern Virginia.
You live in Washington, D.C.,
yeah,
just like me.
I come over the bridge every day. And I think what Obama's done in Virginia, which is to go out to the southwestern part of the state, to go down through the Tidewater, all across the state, the middle of the state, is actually a good strategy for him in Missouri as well. So I hope in the end he goes there. And if he goes to Columbia and Springfield and places he's talking about in Missouri, I think it's a sign that they believe they can win that race.
And here's a question for Vin by email from Michael. In Virginia, it appears the McCain campaign stays away from major metropolitan areas. Is that true, and if so, why?
Well, flip side of the coin from the question Tad just answered. The strongest areas of support for Senator McCain are rural areas, small town areas. I don't think they completely ignore urban areas, but you're right. They go where the votes are, and if he's going to carry Virginia, he's going to carry it by maximizing his lead outside of the Washington, D.C. suburbs of Northern Virginia. And that story is repeated in Missouri, where he's going to carry the center part of the state, and he needs to carry it by a large margin. So you just go where the votes are.
Thanks very much for the call, Rick. Let's see if we can get Joe on the line. And Joe's with us from Louisville in Kentucky.
I wanted to know if Mr. Rudin could do us another favor down here in Kentucky. He had predicted Ann Northrup 2 years ago was going to beat John Yarmuth for the Congress representative here, and I wanted to know if he could do the same thing and predict that Mitch McConnell was going to win this time. He's in a dogfight down here with a guy named Bruce Lunsford, and it's almost even here in Kentucky, and that's just unheard of for the minority leader. I wanted to know if he had any kind of comment on that.
Well, you'll be very happy to know that I'm predicting Mitch McConnell wins, which is probably good news for the Democratic Party. But you know, as we said last week, no leader of the Senate, if McConnell goes down, since 1932 has a leader gone down. I think McConnell still wins. He's canny enough. But again, if McConnell goes down, then we don't have to worry about the Sununus and the close races, then it's going to be a Democratic sweep, sort of like what we saw in 2006.
Joe, thanks for the call. Let's get one last question from here in the museum.
Bill Murphy from Fresno, California. We've been hearing more and more about voter suppression as we get closer to the election. I'm beginning to worry about it myself. Are we going to see another Florida problem or anything like that coming up in November?
Either of you guys lawyers, you may be looking forward to this.
We're probably both lawyers.
No, I'm not a lawyer.
I'm a lawyer. I used to be. I'm a lapsed lawyer.
Recovering lawyer.
I don't think we're going to see what we saw in 2000 because I don't think the election is going to be as close as it was in 2000. I don't think we're going to have an election with over 100 million people voting decided by less than 600 votes. But I do think this issue of whether or not we in this country can vote and vote freely is a real issue, and it's on the table. We just heard from a woman in North Carolina who's been trying to vote for 2 days and has been standing in line for an hour. And I think that's going to become the issue. Do we have the right not only to vote in this country, but can we vote not easily or conveniently, but reasonably? And it seems right now that in a lot of places it's taking far too long for people to exercise their most precious right.
By the way, we're going to be focusing on this issue tomorrow on the charges from both sides that the other guy is trying to steal the election. So if you'd like to tune in tomorrow to Talk of the Nation, we'll go into this in a little bit more depth. But in any case, gentlemen, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
Good to be with you.
And that was Vin Weber, the former member of the House of Representatives from the state of Minnesota, Republican strategist and lobbyist here in Washington, D.C. Tad Devine, Democratic strategist, now formerly the chief consultant to Al Gore in 2000, now president of Devine Mulvey, a strategic communications company in Washington, D.C. Ken Rudin's going to stay with us. Ken?
Quick thing I said earlier, 60 votes gives you a veto-proof majority. I meant filibuster-proof.
Filibuster-proof.
You need 67 votes for veto-proof.
Ken Rudin correcting himself. First time for anything. Let's wait. Next, we're going to come back and talk with the Green Party presidential candidate. Cynthia McKinney will join us. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.